originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon. Welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Mike Penna, alongside my usual entry mate on the program. You know him as the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you tuning in nationwide on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, and everyone who is tuned in on our website worldwide at horseracingradio.net. We appreciate you being with us tonight as well. Listeners in more than 160 countries have made the Horse Racing Radio Network their home for racing covers throughout the year, and we can't thank you enough and want to wish everybody a very happy holiday season as we get ready to kick off another edition, brand new edition of Trainer Talk here tonight. And JT, here we go again. We say this every single week when we come on the air. It's not always about the established Baffert, Asmussen, Pletchers of the world. There are other people who have done some really good things and have been doing them for a long time that we need to recognize. Tonight, no exception.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so many trainers out there that work hard and just aren't fortunate enough to have that 300 string of stakes winners coming to them every year that some of those guys have. And it's a constant struggle to get nice horses. And the impressive thing is when these trainers get a nice horse, they know exactly what to do with it. So it's a pleasure. And the guy we're having on tonight, I don't know him personally. I've interviewed him a couple times at Keeneland after he's run horses there, but a friend of mine worked for him for a few years and said nothing but nice things about him.
Yeah. And he is really on a roll here in 2018. He has trained 8 winners from just 52 starters this year. In total, he has saddled 172 winners, and his runners have made more than $5.3 million in purse earnings. He has won greatest stakes races around the country, and he just won a big one this past Saturday down at Gulfstream Park, upsetting Audible, the heavy favorite in the Grade 3 Harlan's Holiday. He did that with Sir Anthony, and we welcome our Sir Anthony to the program. That is Anthony Mitchell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Anthony, welcome to Trainer Talk.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Do you like the way I just made you a sir? I just knighted you.
You know what? That never gets old. It's something that started up there at Arlington. And for sure, I really don't know. There's a lot of people staking claim they was the first person to tell me that. But for all intensive purposes, it's become a running joke with John Dooley up there, the race announcer. And, you know, every time we run, it's always in trainers, Sir Anthony Mitchell. it's a running joke that we all enjoy. You know, in this business, as serious as it is, we enjoy a little bit of fun. So,
well, you know, if you keep knocking off all these multiple graded stakes winners and, you know, Florida Derby winners, then I think at some point the Queen has to take notice, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, hopefully at some point, you know, I'd like to be there at Royal Ascot with them funny hats and towels and everything else. I'm okay. I'd like to wear that. But, like you said before, some of us little guys get overlooked. So at some point, maybe Her Majesty might just come along and put that sword on my shoulder.
That would be fantastic. I can't think of anything better, really.
Well, that and some champagne off.
Yeah. Well, congrats on the big win this weekend. Well done, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, it was a very, very special win. You know, we was overlooked by everybody going down there, and some raised eyebrows. Why would we run against Audible? Yada, yada, yada. You know what? We've been against these big horses before. not always as successful as we was on Saturday. But, you know, if you've got a nice horse and you know your horse and, you know, you weigh up what's going on out there, you take a shot. That's what we did, and we come up trumps.
Yeah, well, it was a sensational race, a tremendous ride by Brian Hernandez and the favorite. It was funny. I was watching the race at home on TVG, and I mean, even after the race was run, they kept talking about how Audible, you know, was arguably the best horse in the race and blah, 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 blah. And that's all they could talk about. And that always irritates me when you knock down the winner by promoting the horse that just got beat. I hate that, you know?
Well, you're not the only one. I mean, myself and my assistant that was down there, we got a little, really not the back end of it, but certainly we was walking past hearing him going on and on and on about Audible. And that's a horse that runs second.
Yeah.
The horse that runs first should have been the horse I was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you give credit where credit's due. He run the big horse down, like you said. Brian Hernandez rode an incredible ride, the smartest rider in the race, without doubt. And he got the job done. End of story. They run second. We won.
Yeah. And he was, at least in terms of the wagering, he was a surprise. He was nearly 26-1 and sat at the back of the pack for much of that trip and then just kind of accelerated home. And as you said, Anthony, able to run down the heavy favorite Audible and win by a half a length. As he's coming down the stretch, put me there with you. What was going through your mind?
Well, I was quietly comfortable going down the backside, to be quite honest. Before the race, Brian and I talked, and we made reference to the Bruce D that was run up there at Arlington. On that day, Brian rode the second horse to Sir Anthony, and he recalled in the race that he saw this horse come past him like a bullet and had no idea where it come from. So understanding that this horse does have that turn of foot at the end was reassuring to me, should we be in a striking position. But I had to reassure Brian, you know, going into race, believe in this horse. He's a nice horse. He's got two gears. And we kind of saw that the other day. But coming down the stretch when I'm on the rail, and Audible's got to come down the outside, I'm praying, just hold on, just hold on. But, we had the inside rail. And contrary to what everybody said about how bad the track was and Audible's jockey's comment that you couldn't make ground on a track like that, we come from last to first, just about. So coming down there, I was quietly comfortable. But then when he got his head in front, I was very comfortable that we're going to hold on. By how much, I don't know. But I thought there I had the race won coming down the stretch. And, of course, I'm screaming like a banshee. probably not to the likes of Audible's owners that were sitting right across from me. But anyway, it was a great ride and a great time and a great win.
Yeah, well, it was a great ride. And, you know, it's Brian's first, you know, full year down at Gulfstream. And he picked up on the bias, if you want to call it that, that the inside was the place to be. And it's been like that lately for sure. And Javi, before the race, had given himself kind of an excuse, like, I don't really know where the best part of the track is, and it's hard to tell. And I mean, it was almost like, you know, he was afraid to ride the race, and I get it because everybody's afraid to ride a 1-9 shot, you know? I mean, but still, I thought it was really fantastic, and I was happy for you. Even though I don't know you, I know about you, and I know what it's like to be a small trainer in a big racetrack, and it was a great thing to watch.
I was just so delighted for everybody. It was a great effort by the horse, take nothing away from the horse. But I'm also so grateful for everybody involved, my team here in Chicago, my longtime owner, Mr. Otto, and for, you know, Mr. Hernandez. You know, he rode a great race. When these things come together, they're very, very special for lots of reasons. But most of all is when you've sat down and you you know, you put your plan together. The what ifs, should we, shouldn't we? And our plan was kind of unconventional, but it panned out. And the greatest thing is when you sit down, you put pen to paper, and you get the result you was looking for. Nothing better. You know, you've really accomplished everything that you wanted to do. It's well thought out, executed brilliantly, and you've got a result, the result you wanted.
Yeah, you mentioned the owner, Mr. Otto, Richard Otto Stables, the formal name of the ownership group. Tell me a little bit about Mr. Otto and that relationship you have with him.
Our relationship goes back 20-something years now. I first met Mr. Otto when I was working for Richard Duchossois on his farm at Hillendale up here in Barrington. Mr. Otto was an owner there. He had his broodmares there. He foaled his foals there. But he also sent horses back to the farm for layups. I'd never met Mr. Otto before until he come in the barn one day and said to me, I've got a horse at the track I'd like to send back to the farm. I need some TLC and, you know, it needs a little work done on him and hopefully you can get it done. Well, the horse come back, we did the TLC, we did the work, sent it back to the racetrack, and he kept winning some races. So that was my first introduction to him, but of course, you know, he was delighted with the results and all, and started sending me a few more back, and we got some more results with those. And, you know, that was where our initial relationship started. But getting on to 2000, well, actually, it was a little bit before 2000, probably 1999. He was very instrumental in pushing me to go out on my own, to the point telling me you're wasting your time as a farm trainer out here. You got too much talent. You should be doing this. And I said, well, I appreciate it, but I'm recently married. I've got I've got a young child, and going out there on a what if is a little bit scary, and I don't know if I'm ready to do something like that. Well, he kept pushing and pushing and pushing until 2000, where I really took my license out and started out. And he helped me in the beginning with several other people. We only had a few horses at the time. And it really wasn't that great of a year, but some things happened, and we was happy with what happened. The next year is where Mr. Otto really started to fill my stalls for me. And we went on to have, you know, success from there on. But he's been a great patron to the game, an unbelievable, inspirational man to me, not only as an owner, but as an individual himself. So that's pretty much how it all started out. And then we went on to do some better things, firstly with Summer Miss and Julie's Prize. And then we went on with Lovely Afternoon. She was a nice horse, Talio Dixie. She was another nice horse that we had. Lemonade Kid, he was second in the graded Stars and Stripes up there at Arlington. But he also had, I mean, going back to Summer Miss quickly, she was a very good Illinois bred, ended up being Horse of the Year up there. Julie's Prize, she was a champion two-year-old, reserve champion. I mean, the accolades for Illinois go on and on and on, what myself and Mr. Otto have achieved. But nationwide in the graded stakes, you know, for the little bit that we've participated in these graded stakes, we've done pretty well. Our record shows we've done okay.
Yeah, well, it's tough to win a graded stakes anywhere. And I remember the day Summer Miss won the Thoroughbred Club of America stakes.
I mean, in fairness, the other day, the Harlan's Holiday probably was the most important race I've ever won. But my most favorite race was the Thoroughbred Club of America, without doubt. Easy, hands down. I had her in Chicago, her normal rider, Larry Sterling. I couldn't get to go down to ride the horse, telling me you got no shot. You're wasting your time. But Renee Douglas was always a favorite of that mare, and kept asking, you know, I'd like to ride that mare. I'd like to ride that mare. And it was tough to say no to the leading rider. up there in Arlington at the time. But, you know, we're very faithful. We stay with our jockeys, but Larry didn't want to go down there to ride her. So I called Renee up and he said he'd love to ride her, and what a job he did. I mean, that was a three-way photo finish at the end. But I was just ecstatic to win a Greatest Stakes at Keeneland.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember it because I talked to you after the race, and you were over the moon, and I thought that was great. And then watching you walk off the track, it was a lot of fun to see how pumped up you were.
Pumped up and emotional. I mean, you know, you little guy like me goes down there to take a Graded Stake. Like the Thoroughbred Club of America was just awesome. But what was even better was the accolade Mr. Otto got over there at the Thoroughbred Club of America afterwards with the dinner that they held for us over there, where he got to stand up in front of all the big farms in Kentucky, the likes of Claiborne and Lane's End and, you know, all the big farms. And they wanted to know about him and how he came about breeding or got the mating together for Summer Miss. And he was just chuffed to bits that there's all these big farms that are interested in what he does. And, you know, it really was a celebration for him. And like I say, you know, we've been together ever since. And I think if you asked him, as much as that win was so important the other day, I think he would agree that our greatest love was the Thoroughbred Club of America.
Visiting with trainer Anthony Mitchell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Anthony, when you come to a big race such as the Thoroughbred Club of America or the Harlan's Holiday this past weekend, and you bring an Illinois bred into that race, considering all of the challenges and the struggles that program is going through in Illinois, and considering what it's meant to you and to your career, is there something maybe even a little extra special when you cross the finish line first?
Absolutely. Like you said, winning a great stake anywhere, you know, and to be honest, winning a race period, it's a great feeling. But going down there and winning a graded stake against the class we was running against the other day, against the class that we was running against in the Thoroughbred Club of America, I mean, there's really no words to describe it. It's the feeling that makes it all. You know, it's just an incredible feeling. It's the feeling of, you know, you did it. You were successful. Everything that you put together has come together, and it was a success. You know, and getting to train that type of horse is a treasure too. I mean, we don't get to have 20 graded stake horses in the barn. We get one in a blue moon like this is for me, and we relish the fact. Well, like I said, you ride the crest of the wave till it breaks. And I'm still riding it, so it's a great, great feeling.
Yeah, you mentioned the planning aspect of, you know, putting the pen to paper and figuring it out. How long had you been pointing Sir Anthony to the Harlan's Holiday?
We looked at it probably a month back. We was also looking at the Discovery over there at Aqueduct, but logistics and all getting him there was really not productive. He was going to be on the road for a long time. We looked into flying him over there. We couldn't get that accomplished. Not that it's not a long ride down to Florida. It is. But it was a better plan to go to Florida than it was to try and get over there to Aqueduct. But planning it, the biggest issue for him in planning was getting him down to Florida without getting sick. When I took him down to Tampa last year, he got very sick on me. You know, the shipping fever that knocks him out. And every time I got him over it, starting back in training again, he kind of relapsed on me again. So it was very difficult to try and get something done. And in the end, we actually didn't get anything done till we got back up to Chicago.
Yeah, well, whatever you did, it worked. You said that you would rank that particular win in the Harlan's Holiday as the most important victory in your career, not necessarily your favorite, but your most important. How come?
Well, because going into the Thoroughbred Club of America, she was already proven that mare. I mean, she deserved her shot in it. With this horse, early on this year, I mean, his form was not the greatest. It's kind of muddy. And really didn't know where we was at with him until the light went on in the Bruce D. Once that went on, we came back in a couple of allowance races here at Hawthorn, but to me, that they were still very impressive. And we thought now was probably the time to take on some graded stakes and just see what, you know, see where we're at. Let's get a line on what type of horse we got. Well, obviously, going in there, I looked at the nominations and there's Audible, and I thought, oh, man, you know, of all horses in there, this son of a gun's in there. But, you know, we said, let's take a shot. Let's take a shot. So going in there and not really having much respect from most out there and popping up to run the race he did, I mean, his numbers were good. His numbers were getting better from the Bruce D through these last couple of allowance races here at Hawthorn. But certainly numbers were not really good enough to be Audible. So jumping up and achieving all of that, beating Audible, you know, the way we did, which was, you know, people will argue with me, but we beat him fair and square. You know, that was very, very important to me. When the odds are stacked against me and we come through and we can perform the way we did and the plan comes together the way it did, that was what was really, really important to me. And, you know, on a 1-9 shot on a horse that obviously loves the Gulfstream track, winning the Fountain of Youth and then coming back and winning the Florida Derby, my little Illinois bred just come through and, you know, he got the job done.
Yeah,
so that respect, that is why it's probably the most important to me.
Yeah, and it was a race that had national attention. I mean, everybody wanted to watch that race, and you know, it was almost like upset beating Man of War. I mean, the way they were talking about it, you know, and that in itself is worth something. I mean, a lot more people know who Anthony Mitchell is today than knew last week, you know? So it is a big thing. And you're to be admired. I mean, if they ran races on paper, nobody would have entered against Audible, right? Cause on paper, he did look like a cinch, but we know they don't run the races on paper, and we need people to take a shot. And Jerry Fanning, an old trainer in California, brilliant guy, he told me one time, never be afraid of one horse. Don't ever miss a race because of one particular horse, because they can all get beat. And that's advice that served me well over the years when I trained, and it obviously was good for you too, because you could have wrapped up and said, well, what, we don't want to run against that horse, and just kept them around and look for something easier. But it's good that you took a shot and it worked out great for you.
Exactly. I mean, when I saw it after entries came out as a 6-horse field, I said, you know, I got a shot to be 1-2-3. It doesn't matter what anybody says, what anybody thinks. This little horse is going to go down there, and I was quietly confident they finishing the first three. But we took pole position.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Anthony, I want to come back to something that you mentioned earlier in this first half of the program. You said how special it is to win a Graded Stakes, and it certainly is. But you said just to win any race is special. And we've often talked about it on this show and our other programs, that just to get a horse to the races and get a horse in the starting gate of a maiden race is a major accomplishment. It is very difficult to do. And there are people listening that might not understand what makes this so challenging as a sport. So from a trainer's perspective, what is it about this game that makes it such a challenge just to get a horse to the starting gate, just to win any race?
Well, it's a sense of accomplishment. I mean, these horses were never asked, horses when they're born are never asked to be race horses. I mean, that's what we put them here for, is our doing. So we've got to give them every opportunity to go out there and perform. And you've really got to listen to your horses in their development process. And when you see them transform from the yearling, when you get them and you put the bridle on, you put a saddle on, you put a rider on, you get them to gallop. And once they start galloping, they start looking like little racehorses. And then just taking them along, and they've all got their own character. And, you know, you like to develop these babies. A lot of times, I've been fortunate with the good horses I've had. I've seen that they've got some potential early on. And when you're right about a horse, it's a great feeling. But just bringing them along and the sense of achievement of, you know, we've got them past this stage. Now it's on to the next stage. Yeah, we've got them past that. Now we're bringing them to the racetrack. We're getting them used to the racetrack atmosphere, teaching them, you know, breaking out the gate, prepping them to get into the race. It's not all trainers do that, but for the longest time, I used to break my own horses. So I was kind of involved a little bit earlier than some of these trainers. And bringing them from that stage of breaking to putting them in the gate, watching them spring out the gate, and the thrill of watching them run and then come round the turn into the home stretch, and here you are pounding down the stretch, and you're going to win. There's no better feeling. It's the greatest thrill in the world. You know, in this business, as tough as it is, 7 days a week, you're on call 24 hours a day. It can get very stressful. But when you see what the work you've done and it's come together, and you know, you've put this little baby into the spotlight now, and he's enjoying it, and you're enjoying it, the owners are enjoying it, it's a great feeling. It really is. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah, and if
and
you
I
could...
think somewhere along the line, the industry, in some facts, people have lost the fun part.
Yeah, and I was just going to go that direction with you too. If you could take that feeling and you could bottle it, how many times have we said that, Jude? That if you could bottle that feeling of having your horse storm down the stretch, and then that feeling of knowing you're going to win, and then bam, the horse hits the finish line. That feeling, if you could bottle that, this sport would be the most marketable sport in the world.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely true.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Anthony Mitchell is our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, you have to get to a quick break. Stay with us. We'll come back and talk more about your story and your background. As a matter of fact, we'll tell you about the early days of Anthony Mitchell and his very famous godson. Yeah, that's on the other side of this. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. The Caribbean Classic is back on Saturday, December 8th with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th, a program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosa Mayer, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Sir Anthony is riding the rail here for Brian Hernandez Jr. He might have a seam too, and he's only two lengths off the lead as they run to the top of the stretch. Apostle has the lead. Audible fully stretched on the far outside. The rail open for Sir Anthony, and they're at the top of the stretch. Castellano now asks Audible for his best. Sir Anthony giving him all he wants on the rail. These two for a final 16th. Sir Anthony the leader. Audible has been outrun by Sir Anthony. Sir Anthony upsets the Harlan's Holiday and wins it a half a length. Audible was second. Closer for third, Village King or Apostle in 145 flat.
Sir Anthony storming home at Gulfstream Park last Saturday to upset the Grade 3 Harlan's Holiday for trainer Anthony Mitchell, who is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Welcome back to the program, Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Pete Aiello with the call of that race last weekend, and it's a race that, as you heard in the first half of the show, Anthony Mitchell ranks as his most important win in his career. Not necessarily his favorite, but his most important win. And if you missed any portion of the show and the first half of the program, simply head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show, all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure. It's there for you, horseracingradio.net. Well, Anthony, you think about that win, and you said it's your most important win. You've had some big ones throughout your career. We've touched on a couple of those, but I want to go back a little further here. And you talked about being around the farm in Illinois, and you talked about Mr. Otto, the owner of that horse, and what he meant to your career. Take me back to the very beginning. Where did Anthony Mitchell first fall in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing?
Well, that was back in Brighton in England. When I was a kid at school, my neighborhood really wasn't the best neighborhood. But it was respectful, but it was rough. And one day I came home from school, and my father, in his infinite wisdom, God rest his soul, bought me a pony. So I come back to the house, and there's a pony in the front yard. So I'm just staring in amazement. What's this horse doing here? So went into the house. My father said, there it is. You're going to learn to look after horses. Now, my father was a butcher, so there's no relevance there. But anyway, so that's what started out. At school at the time, there was a work experience program. And I spoke to the guy in charge of it and said, you know, my father's bought me this horse. I don't know why, but I need to be somewhere where I can learn how to look after a horse. So I was kind of expecting to be at a riding stable or something like that. But in fact, what he did was he got in touch with Charlie Moore, who was a steeplechase trainer in Brighton. And Charlie said, bring him up here, let's see. So I went up there with my father, and he said, okay, well, we're going to take you on. And I was 14 at the time, so I hadn't left school. Went up there and spoke to Charlie and started out weekends and slowly but surely dropped out of school and started working there full time. So that's how I started out in racing, working for Charlie Moore. And I worked for Charlie for, I guess, 14, 15 years before I come to this country. And he taught me, you know, everything from mucking stalls to galloping to trying a race ride to eventually being his head lad. His son, Gary Moore, was a jockey in the yard and was the assistant trainer. So I took the next tier as his head lad.
Whatever happened to the pony?
Well, you know, as funny as in the end, the pony weren't fast enough. I like a little bit more speed. So we actually did sell the pony to Charlie's daughter, Candy Morris, who was a very accomplished steeplechase rider there as well. But she also did pretty good on the flat as well as. So she had him as a pony club horse and actually did pretty good with it. So the pony stayed within the yard, but Charlie's daughter Candy had it.
That's cool. That's a cool story. Steeplechasing's slightly different, than flat racing, but the same principles apply as to horsemanship, but 15 years is a long time to stay with one particular stable. You guys must have had a really good relationship.
Yeah, them guys were like family to me. I mean, Gary was 3 years older than me, but he took me under his wing and treated me like his younger brother. To this day, we're still very, very close, and I was his best man at his wedding, and went on to babysit his kids.
Yeah, there's another more that's involved with that family that's turned out to be pretty good in this sport, too. That's jockey Ryan Moore. And you told me yesterday when I called you to ask you to come on the program that Ryan is actually your godson.
He is. Yeah, that was one of the kids I used to babysit. yeah, I mean, Ryan's gone on leaps and bounds. But to be honest, people in America really wouldn't understand this family. Gary and his children are probably best known as Britain's racing family. Gary rode as a steeplechase rider, and he did pretty good. Then went on to be a pretty successful trainer. He's probably got 180 horses in his yard right now. But not only that, all of his children, starting with Ryan as the oldest, who's obviously international fame. Then next it's Jamie, who's a very accomplished steeplechase rider. Next is Josh, who rides steeplechase also. And then there's Haley, who's Gary's daughter, that actually has gone into commentary and will work, you know, like the English Derby, covering it on TV and all. But she also rides as a jockey as well. But from Charlie onwards, the people know how to work, and they're very, very dedicated people, very hardworking people, and actually deserve the success that the family has had. They're great people. And anybody in England, if you ask them about Moors, they would say the same thing. They're good people and very accomplished, awesome.
Well, it's definitely a lifestyle business that we're in, and when the entire family's in it, that's got to be a lot of fun, right? I mean, I can't think of anything better than to hang out with your siblings and you're all doing the same type of job. That's got to be really entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, for the Moors, they were very, very close-knit family, very close. I mean, you know, sometimes there's squabbling within the siblings, but not in this case. These kids, they do the greatest. They're very tight. They stay in touch all the time. They do things together as a family. And, you know, that's tough to see in this industry, but they make time to see, you know, each other. When Jamie won down there at Cheltenham, the big race down there, Ryan took off to go and watch his brother ride. And I want to say it was the champion chase that Jamie won on Gary's horse. And I could never pronounce his horse's name right. Sire de Grew, I think it was. Mm-hmm. He ended up being Horse of the Year, Steeplechase Horse of the Year that year. But Ryan took time off to go and watch his little brother ride down there at Cheltenham and win. And, of course, Gary, his dad, was the trainer.
Have you ever had the opportunity to give Ryan a leg up?
Yeah.
On one of your horses?
Yeah, he rode one for me at... He rode one for me Breeders' Cup Day at Churchill several years ago. Well, actually, it was more than several years ago. It was quite a long time. But, you know, Ryan rode one for me. And the interesting story here is he was going to ride Sir Anthony in the Bruce D. However, his flight arrangements and everything else, you just don't know what time his plane's going to get in. Is there a delay? You don't know how the race is going to be on in the program on the day, what race is going to come up as. So it was a little difficult to put that together. So I stayed safe and went with Florent Giroux, who's rode a lot of winners for me. And we've got a great rapport as well as. But Ryan was keyed in to ride Sir Anthony in the Bruce D. Million Day at Arlington.
So he could have ended up on him in Florida too if things had worked out properly.
Well, you know, to looking at the Pegasus right now, that's all it is. I mean, it would have been you want to ride me, Ryan, or you want to ride Aiden O'Brien? What do you want to do? You've got the choice. You've got the Mitchell, you've got O'Brien. What do you want, the Brit or the Paddy?
Come on, blood's thicker than water, isn't it?
There you go. Well, we would have seen, wouldn't we?
Talking with trainer Anthony Mitchell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Anthony, you brought up the Breeders' Cup and that appearance in 2005 in the Juvenile Fillies. That was with the original spin. Let's go back to that day. She ran huge. She was third. Take me back to that day and that experience of being at the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the chance of running the Breeders' Cup, that was a feat in itself. But yeah, this individual, she was a nice filly. She was very difficult to train, mentally and physically. She was a very moody individual. But on the day, I mean, she had it all together. When she broke from the gate, she got knocked, coming out of the gate, knocked sideways, and Jerry Bailey, he kind of rushed her up to put her back in the race again, and she ran a huge third. On reflection, things were different. You know, if we didn't rush her up, maybe the result might have been a little bit different. I think maybe we might have got second. I don't think we would have won. But anyway, to participate in the Breeders' Cup, huge, huge event. And I did bring her back the next year, but she really didn't hold together very well. But running in the Breed Cup, I mean, the lead up to it, I started out there in New York, and to come back and have a horse run in the Breeders' Cup there was a delight.
Where was it? Really, that was Belmont Park, right?
Belmont Park, yeah.
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 Yeah. And the winner of the race that year, by the way, the Juvenile Fillies, was a filly trained by Dwayne Lucas by the name of Folklore. Remember her?
Yeah,
Folklore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't remember her. She was in front of me. I wish she was behind me, but it didn't happen. So, but no, it was great. It was great to be there. It was fun to be, you know, in the Breeders' Cup. And you know, going back to what we said before, we broke that filly. We brought her along. We got her to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, that in itself, you know, how many people get to do that?
Yeah, that's quite a feat.
Yeah, it was. But like I say, you know, there's that filly. She was difficult horse to train. She would have her moments where she'd throw herself down in the paddock, and you know, she was tough.
Yeah,
she was tough to train.
But you know, you think about what you were able to get out of these horses. You know, we go back to Sir Anthony and the nearly 26-1. Upset the other day at Gulfstream Park. And then you talk about original spin, getting her to the Breeders' Cup and running third, and maybe even should have been second or could have been second in that race. And then later on in her career, I guess in her three-year-old season, she was, second in the test stakes at Saratoga. She was 34-1 that afternoon. So you're doing this with horses that aren't, at least on paper, what some of the other contenders in the race are. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair to say, you know. I mean, the top trainers get access to all kinds of very good horses. We get access to, you know, we get access to good horses once in a blue moon. It's a tough game. But, you know, when we get them, it's obvious that we can, you know, take them to the race.
She ran
to the party.
She ran so huge that day at Saratoga in the test stakes. She had the lead pretty much from the start. She held it until deep stretch when Swap Flipperoo came and ran her down, ended up drawing off to win by two lengths. But your filly, Original Spin, held for second. And what a huge race she ran that afternoon.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a great race. That was certainly one of her better days, and she was focused on the day. And you know, that was great. I mean, to run second in Saratoga in a Grade One stake, there's not many of us Illinois boys get that done. But we did on that day, and you know, she ran a big race, ran a real big race.
How about the top four jockeys in that race. Ibar Koa was aboard Swap Flipperoo. You rode Fernando Jara, Anthony. Garrett Gomez, the late Garrett Gomez, was third in that race. And then Hall of Famer Kent DeSormo, fourth.
Yeah, well, it's Saratoga, you can.
Yeah.
What do you expect?
Salty.
Salty.
Well, you know, we was fortunate to get him on the day. And he rode a super race on her. You know, we just weren't good enough to hold on. In the end of the story, you know. But we took back a lot of good memories from that and used it to the best of our ability.
Yeah, you have an opportunity to win. That's the thing. I mean, you're not taking a pie in the sky shot like people do in the Derby. They know their horse has no chance, but they just want to run in the Derby. When you take these shots, you're taking shots with horses that you know are in good form. You're taking them there in top shape. That their numbers are close enough to make them competitive in the race. And, you know, it's like making a putt. You just try to get it close and hope it drops in, right?
And that's just it. You know, I won't take a horse to a big race like that without a legitimate shot. There's no point. Like you said, what's the point of running last in the Derby? Big deal, so you run in the Derby. You know? It's when you're in there and you've got a competitive edge. That's when it really matters. I like to win. I don't like to run last. And, you know, if you've got an individual that's obviously done enough to be able to get into the Derby, whether you're 100-1 or not, why are you going to take him on these big guys when there's ample opportunity to win decent stakes maybe elsewhere? You know, I don't go for that just to be there. You know, there's people out there that enjoy the moment. Go on with it. But I enjoy winning.
Trainer Anthony Mitchell, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Anthony, how would you describe your approach and your philosophy to training racehorses?
Patience. You know, when that horse arrives in the barn, that's it. That's what I've got. I've got to get this horse's full potential. I've got to get it to the point where this is as good as he's going to be or she is going to be. And a lot of time, that takes patience. I mean, I'm really fortunate with the two owners I've got in my barn that understand that you can only push horse to so far. You can only squeeze that lemon so much. But if you really want to get the best out of it, look after them. They'll tell you when they're not right. You just got to listen. That's all. So my approach is, I don't know, slow but sure. I mean, if horse is ready to go to the next stage, let's take it. But if it's not, let's just hang on a minute. And, you know, when it shows that we can go to this next stage where we want to go, then so be it. But not every horse can get there. So at that point, you know, you just got to listen and you got to back off a little bit. That's what you do. You know, we all want a graded stake horse, but maybe it's not a graded stake horse, but you might be able to win a stake. Maybe, you know, your allowance horse looks like it wants to be a stake horse, but the reality is it's going to be very tough to get there, but there's ample opportunities in allowance racing. And just really being a realist. You got to be a realist in this game. You can blow a lot of money on dreaming. But, you know, that's your investment out there. I'm going to look after your investment the best I can. But hopefully you'll listen to me. Because I haven't been in positions where I've told owners, you know, I don't think I can get your horse past this point. And the results coming into that point were pretty handy, pretty nice. But when I run in second and third, I tell them I don't think I can win with this horse. Some people just don't like to hear it, but that's the gospel truth. And I'm not right all the time, but I'm right most of the time.
It's always a fluid situation too, isn't it? Like depending on the horse's age, where they are in their training. So it can change for the better a lot of times if people are willing to listen to their trainer and be more patient with their horses.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I take a look at the pedigrees a lot of times. You got horses like Lemon Drop Kid. Normally, they need to go longer. They come round when they're a little bit older. Mineshaft, he got better as he got older. He, you know, the older he got, the better he got. you got to take this in consideration. But also, if there's early signs or there's signs that, you know, this horse is not really going to live up to what you'd hope him to, then, you know, it maybe start thinking in a different direction.
Anthony, who are some of the more patient trainers that you've had the opportunity to be around in your career?
Charlie Moore. He was very inspirational in my education. We had steeplechase horses, so they don't run in they don't start running till they're 3-year-olds. So a lot of times, you know, we'd be bringing them out the field when they're 3-year-olds and start breaking them then. And you know, some of them horses were real quick to learn, and others weren't. But I say, you know, he was in no real rush. Unless there was early indications that you're wasting your time. So Charlie Moore, certainly his son Gary. Gary, like I said, he's like a brother to me. Got dirty with me, hands on. And what was interesting was one time I went back last year. Here he is. He's still in the stalls. He still grooms his own horses that he wants to. And Gary would be 63 now, but just loves it. So, yes, certainly Charlie Moore, Gary Moore. When I came to this country, I went to work for Skiffington, who had a barn full of graded stake horses. Skiff actually taught me that the difference between training in England and training over here. And it was a little bit of a transition, but basically it's the same. You know, you just got to know your horse. So Skiff introduced me to the big horses, to the big game, to the big races. And then after Skiff, I went to work for Rick Schossberg, who was going out on his own. At the time when I come to this country, working for Tommy, Rick was an assistant there, and he kind of took me under his wings when I first got to this country and looked after me. And then we became very good friends. After working for Tommy, I went back to England for a little bit. I got a phone call from Rick, who said that he was getting married and would like me to go to his wedding. But also, he was going out on his own and would like me to take his second string at Aqueduct. So that's what I did. And then an opportunity arose with Billy Badgett, who had Go for Wand at the time and a lot of good other horses. So I took that job. But them three guys were very different. Tommy was more electric, I think. Probably the toughest man I've ever worked for. But he was a good horseman, and he was very focused at that time. Rick, on the other hand, was very much kind of my background, where, you know, you get in the stalls. Rick had that horse, Three Chop Road. That was an old horse. That he owned himself, but he would be the one in the stall putting the poultice on him and, you know, making sure that everything was together there. And then Billy, you know, I had the opportunity to take his second string up there in Saratoga and the babies down in Aiken. So, you know, you learn a little bit everywhere you go. You take in all the good parts and you throw out the bad parts, put it that way. But certainly everybody I work for, I've learned something from. But really and truly, I guess because I started out knowing absolutely nothing at all, couldn't spell horse when I was in England, going in working for Charlie was probably the most instrumental in my field of, you know, trying to train horses.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey for our guest here tonight, Anthony Mitchell. He is our guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Anthony, just a couple of minutes left before we have to wrap up the program. This hour has just absolutely flown by. Really appreciate that. We always like to end up by asking trainers to tell us a little something about themselves maybe people don't know. So outside of horse racing, any other hobbies, any interests, things you like to do?
Well, there's really not a lot of time. I mean, you know, to be able to stop sweating over when's the next race and how we're going to run and where we're going to be. Well, you know, how's Sir Anthony now? How is he down there in Ocala turned out? Is he okay? And I'm sure he is. But really, I mean, my my interest is really just racing. You know, maybe I'm a bit boring. I do like to go to good restaurants, and fortunately for me, I do have an owner that excels in knowing good restaurants and takes me there and takes me out to dinner a lot with, you know, Mr. Otto. He lives downtown Chicago, and he likes to go out and eat. So I'm fortunate there. Yeah, I like food. I like good wine. But in doing anything else, there's really not much time. I'm in the barn. I'm not one of these Hollywood entertaining trainers. I'm back at the barn getting dirty in the trenches.
Yeah, well, you obviously are good at what you do, and that's the way to do it. You know your horses intimately, and that's why you can pull off some of the stuff that you do, because you pay attention. But you got to eat, right? So you might as well take advantage of Mr. Otto's credit card while you can.
Well, I take full advantage of a dinner invite. Let me tell you, some of them restaurants are some of the best in the country, and of course we go there. And he is an excellent, excellent person to know about wine. He taught me all about these finer wines. Not that I could afford them, but I'll certainly drink them.
We need to introduce him to Larry Colmus.
Yeah.
Our good friend, huge wine connoisseur. Yeah. At least he thinks he is. But no, that's outstanding. All right, 2 minutes left here. Anthony, you can have one meal. You can only go to one restaurant. You can have one meal. What's that meal going to be?
Chateau Barrington.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a running joke with me and my owner. He cooks, without doubt, the best steak I have ever had. It's at his home. He's got a home down there on Lakeshore Drive, but he's also got a retreat home up there in Barrington Lakes. It's out in the suburbs. And when he invites me up there to dinner for a steak, I'm there quicker than that. He is by far the best cook of a steak I have ever had. And we've been to some of them big restaurants downtown, but he cooks the biggest and the best steak
I've and ever fine had. Wine. Is so, this guy single?
Yeah, that's what I call his house.
I'm all in.
Yeah, trust me, if you're ever in Chicago, I'll tell him to put him on, because he can cook a steak.
Anthony,
oh my God.
I'm going to hold you to that, my friend. We're just about out of time. Really appreciate the visit. Thank you for telling your story. Congratulations on the recent success, and keep it rolling.
Well, we're going to try our very, very best. We've got some empty stalls, so don't be shy.
All right.
There he is. He's Anthony Mitchell. If you can tell, he's all class. He's got it rolling, too. Fun show?
Yeah, it was great.
Don't forget,
really
fun. Check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion, just head back there. You can listen to all of our shows, horseracingradio.net, and follow us on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for our special guest, Anthony Mitchell, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.